Ring the bell. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates. Lower your mortgage payment, get cash out, or pay off credit cards. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
There we go. 1 o'clock hour on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you.
Somebody did a dance this at the dance comp.
Of course. I'm not surprised.
It's not surprising.
Yeah.
I got to say, though.
Uh-oh.
I believe there were some, in my opinion, questionable music choices in general at the comp. So, one, whoever runs like the dance competition.
Dance Dad over here goes to two competitions and now is critiquing everybody's music selection.
It'll make sense once I hear it. So once you hear it. So one, they clearly don't filter the music when they're just like on stage, just dancing around, hanging out, waiting for awards to start. Because I heard Low, and it was not the edited version.
Now what's the age range of people in this competition? As young as
4 to 18.
Okay.
Well, so the unedited Low. I also heard unedited Dochi and Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
And I just want to be very clear. That should
that is
not.
Surprising.
Oh yeah. But the one that killed me was considering his recent track record. Let's just say the last 6 months. Somebody did an entire dance to Kanye. And I'm like, man, you got to take that out the rep for a 12-year-old for a bit. I'm sorry. He's selling
what song?
He's selling Nazi stuff. Oh, no, you can't be putting Kanye on your kid dancing
what song?
Oh, I don't.
It was one of the classics.
Something off Graduation. Yeah, okay. I can't remember exactly which one now, but like, yeah,
it's a tough spot to be in. You know, it's like the same with some of the other people's music.
They're kids, I'm not saying nobody can't put it on Spotify in their car. I've told you my stance on music is if you admit they're horrible,
like
person,
stronger.
Yeah,
something. I mean, there's a song I've played coming back from break. From Graduation.
Like, you gotta admit that they're a terrible person before you play it. Okay? That's my stance.
From now on, whenever I play
I mean, nobody's
the
doing
Glory,
anything to like R. Kelly or anything, but I mean, it was, you know, like,
I've done
cool.
that as well on the show, and I did not apologize or did not.
That went poorly. You did play R. Kelly.
I remember that. I do remember that.
We gave him a hard time for that one. Sorry. That's all. I just thought, they're dancing on stage, and I was like, maybe get the kids pop version or something. Low here.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that.
I don't know. Be careful.
Did you go up there and complain? You go up there and say, hey.
I, for the most part, I've told you, like as a parent, one of my stances, and if they get older, it'll change. They're 6 and 8. So I gotta be cool. I don't play Kendrick when my kids are in the car or whatever. Right. But
sure.
I view music the same way I view books and art. As in, those are things I don't censor in the Tap household. You want to read books with stuff in them? Cool. You want to, you know, like, those are relatively less censored things in the Tap household. But, like, I still draw a line. Okay? That's still, like, a limit for an 8-year-old.
Oh, of course.
You know?
No, totally.
You want to go see, you know, statues that are, you know, whatever. Same differences like music. It's all artistic expression, in my opinion. So.
Someone says you should have Drew go to one of these dance competitions.
And give his opinion?
What to do? Oh,
mm-hmm. I actually think if we all get fired, we should start a big money, I think.
Hang on. I've been to enough dance competitions growing up. I am...
Oh, your sister dance or something?
I'm glad to be retired from that.
Trust me. We've talked about this. Two sisters, plenty of dance recitals.
I'm glad to be retired.
Went to plenty of dance recitals.
Going to do my homework at her practice.
But vice versa. We make both kids go to both. You know, like she's got to sit down at soccer practice too.
Of course.
You know? It's crazy. It's crazy. They've got no filter.
Someone was joking. They said, Cody, you didn't have to listen to the music. You were in the bathroom the whole time.
That was only at the end. That was Saturday's problem. Saturday's problem, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, my favorite thing, everybody listens at different times in the show. So this is why we also have part of the show podcast. Someone just said, did you guys talk about the Nuggets firing? We actually spent a good 15 minutes talking about Michael Malone getting fired.
Wild.
If you missed our convo on that, it is podcasted. We agree with you. It is surprising. It's pretty shocking. But we already did talk a good chunk of the show in the last half hour about that. Let's talk some Royals baseball, though, a little bit as J.J. Piccolo joined us earlier, the general manager of the Royals. So if you want to hear our conversation with him, that's coming up at 1:30. We asked him about that bullpen. We asked him about, is MJ Melendez getting a little closer to having some success at the plate? So those are some of the things that he gave us the answer to coming up at 1:30. But there is potentially in July a massive shift on the way for college sports. You guys have maybe seen over the last, I guess it's been a year plus at this point, this house antitrust settlement with the NCAA. And really going to change the way we view collegiate sports. And it'll be at the end of amateurism. But to sum it up, there's a judge that still has to approve it. It would allow colleges to directly pay players who will still get full scholarships and NIL deals. And yeah, they will be part of revenue sharing. The dollar amount is going to be something like $20 million or $21 million a year that will go across the sports programs at the university, athletic department. But there will be roster limits, because financially the math isn't going to math. So there will be roster limits, and that is going to change a huge chunk of this. You and I were bringing
that'll
this up earlier. The Title IX stuff is still an issue here,
but
it sounds like it's going to get approved, and I guess they'll just completely ignore
ignore Title IX as it relates to it. I mean, I'm guessing they'll still have to put some resources into those programs, just not the $20 million in salary in order to do it. Weirdly enough, I think it's actually good for the sport. They need to make it a regulated, full professional league. You can still call it college. They can still go to class, and there can still be the parts of it that are like college. It's too big a business. It's always been too big a business. The thing is, I think this actually protects the NCAA more than it protects the players in ways, because now they're finding a way to cap their expenses versus have to endlessly fundraise the NIL budgets to try to find ways to get these players in-house. I still think back alley payments will take place, and everything else that take place before now won't go out of the way. I do kind of feel, I'd be honest, I feel a little bit bad for the players who, even on partial scholarship, or even if they're just paying normal, but they wanted to play college football, and they were player 80 on Alabama, and maybe they were using that as a stepping stone to go to another school, or maybe they were like, their dad went there, and they were going to spend 2 years on the back end of the roster to try to make the team in a bigger way and get to play time on the field. I feel bad because it kind of kills the back end, but like, life is a bit cutthroat. And the truth is, if you're not good enough to make the 53, not good enough to make the 53. And I think that it's going to balance college football as a result of that. I think Ohio State, Alabama, all the SEC schools get a stash. So much talent that is not playing for them right then, but will eventually, that now gets to go to the other universities first. And I like that. I like that for this sport.
Potentially, until somebody comes with some new like loophole or something like that, where they're behind closed doors are able to convince some kid to still be a walk-on, because we're like, well, how are you? Alabama still promised you X amount of money in the future or something like that. That's my only worry still with this. But I think for the most part, yeah, it should allow there to, because of the smaller roster limit, someone can go to a different school and play right away, which should help some of the other schools. Maybe even it's good for D2 as well, with some of the opportunities that are there. Transfer portal, absolutely.
Because, I mean, if I'm not going to play right away, why would I go and wait 2 years at Ohio State when I can go play at West Virginia?
Yeah, the plan hasn't been approved, but it sounds like the judge wanted some tweaks to it, where instead of having the roster limits, take effect immediately, they'll phase it out. So that way, if you're currently a junior, like, you're going to get kicked off the team.
They're grandfathering it in, where anybody who's currently on a roster would be able to stay, even if the roster sizes would expand beyond what the limits would be. But
so about 4 years, and then it would be washed away. That's fine.
Yeah, but starting for the class of 2026, essentially, things would begin.
Again, I think the roster limit thing could lead to what you're saying. I just wonder if we'll find out in a couple of years that, like, Alabama or whoever has still found a loophole, because there will always be backdoor deals and things like that. Like, but the
those are happening now,
right? But if the roster limit, let's say it's 60 or 50, we'll call it 53. We'll keep it like the NFL or whatever. Let's say it's a 53-man roster. You're telling me, though, that Alabama, they don't keep seven players that are still walk-ons and they've promised them X amount of money, or they're already getting X amount of money behind closed
doors? You only have 53 then. If you're keeping those guys separately, then you have to keep it as then you would only have 53 on scholarship if you want seven walk-ons. Like that,
but is the roster limit 53 that are getting paid through the direct payment? Yeah. Or is it literally you can only have 53 people part of your football program?
I think based on, like, they're going to give you roster limits, but they're everybody's on scholarship who's on your roster. Like, there's no walk-ons.
Right. But that's what he said. Can you just agree to stash somebody and pay them cash?
No, because
not inside the 20 million.
No, because you have to report them on your roster.
That's what I'm asking.
They're not on your roster.
Okay.
That makes no sense.
Right. But that's what I'm asking. Like, in the NFL, we have a practice squad, right? Mm-hmm. There's a 53-man roster. I'm just wondering, will we get to a point where
that
some schools will try to have a practice squad and they're still technically paying them behind closed doors?
That would be kind of crazy. I didn't think about that.
What's to say some program won't do that behind, like, keep it quiet, and they have five true freshmen that are on this team. They're still paying them $50,000 a piece or whatever it is.
I want to, like, guarantee you right now, there's a member of every staff of these big programs already looking for the loopholes in this, right? Already looking for the loopholes in this. And so it just depends on, like, if they limit the rosters in a way that I think is productive, then I think it actually kind of works a little bit. I'm hoping it kind of spreads the talent around a little bit. But make no mistake about this. This is meant to protect the NCAA from the egregious actions they have spent the last 50 years trying to avoid paying players. This helps them by capping it way lower than their actual net worth. Think about college football. Think about the salary caps in the NFL. Do you really think that a college football program, and this is for both basketball, and do you really think a college football program, the players are only worth $20 million to the bottom line revenue? You know who actually needs to take a pay cut? ADs. ADs and all the other people, like the number of people paid at the university level, that the head coaches, like, that's where the numbers should come down. We always pretend like it's the players who need to take less. Dabo probably makes $12 million a year.
The problem, though, is that those guys are state employees. Like Nick Saban, when he was the coach at Alabama, was a state employee.
Highest paid employee in the state.
What's Dabo make? $12 million a year, and we're like, players paying 20s too much?
Yeah, that's the problem, is that it's not, you know, it's not related to the school or the NCAA as much as it is just them as an individual. It's not an NCAA thing, the payment for the coaches.
Hey, I guess the only other question I have about this, and I was doing some reading on it, and I guess now I'm, you know, like, as it gets closer and closer, we'll continue to meet more. Mm-hmm. But it's dense, right? The $20 million, do I get to decide how much I give each player? So, like, if I just say, hey, Arch, I'll give you 15 of the 20.
Sure.
I don't think you...
Or is it evenly distributed?
It's got... To me, it makes the most sense for it to just be evenly distributed, because that's what NIL is for.
Nah, I like it. I like it the other way a lot of ways.
Yeah, but why the hell would I? Why on earth would I be the four? Why would I start at wide receiver and get paid $1 million because you're paying Arch 15 when I can go and make 25? I can make
because that's how 25. Professional roster construction works. Jamar Chase could leave and go make 70 million. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how roster construction works. We're giving you a constriction so that. Look, college football, can we admit, is the single most imbalanced professional sport in all of America. It is the most grossly imbalanced sport out of any. Which one's worse?
I mean, soccer is pretty damn imbalanced.
I said American, North American. So, like, I want to be clear. If you're talking European soccer,
the LA Galaxy.
Baseball's. I'm not saying baseball's not imbalanced. The Dodgers
baseball's
is
more
nuts.
Imbalanced. Yeah,
I get what you're saying. The only pushback
with
I would have.
With these restrictions, it is.
Maybe. The only pushback I would have on what you're saying, Cody, would just be, remember, this is a base salary in your normal walk of life, not take the NFL comparison out. Like,
it's your scholarship plus this amount of money.
Sure.
Right. Your base salary, $20 million split across however many athletes. And then I'm the starting quarterback still at Alabama. I'm still going to earn more because I'm the starting quarterback through NIL. And maybe that's the thought, right? Your earning potential is still higher than the number three wide receiver. We all make a baseline amount, but you can go and starting quarterback and get an advertising NIL deal with a car dealership in town still for another $300,000, you know, just as an example.
Well, and I think in terms of bonuses, this is where things get interesting. I think what you should see is the NCAA should figure out a way to essentially, if you make the playoff, your roster gets an influx of this amount of money that you get, that the players get split. If you make the championship game, that's another thing. If you win the Heisman Trophy, you get X amount of dollars. Like, money comes along with the trophy, where it's like golf. That's what it would turn into. Everybody gets the baseline. If you do better, you're going to make more money. And then endorsements, you can go make as much money as you want to. The money always that you make is going to be more in endorsements than it is going to be doing your thing.
I don't think that should be the case. That's not the case in any other professional sport.
Golf.
That's golf. We're entering new territory. I'm fascinated to see how this all plays out,
Tiger's
though, starting
career,
in
golf and tennis. Tiger's career earnings are like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay.
A vast percentage of that is endorsement deals. Like,
but what about the Major League Baseball and NFL and NBA where that's not the model? The model is not you make more in endorsements. The model is I make the salary that I'm earned based on the amount this sport makes.
I understand that, but I think that the way that the model works in college football and the way that essentially is being proposed is it makes so much more sense with a golf-like model where everybody gets a scholarship on the roster. Everybody's going to make money on the roster. If you're Arch Manning, you're going to make more money because you're the star quarterback at Texas and you have the Manning name. That's the way that it goes. And if you play well, you're going to earn more money because you play well. It makes sense for it to be run like golf and everything else for the NCAA's sake, for the program's sake. It's even across the board. And Kansas, it helps Kansas out if it's like that. It helps K-State if it's like that.
In fairness, so like somebody who's actually working on this case, he's a lawyer locally who, I've met with a couple of different, I don't know what's the name out there, but he's working on this kind of case. He said the scholarships will be equal, the payments will not. So like you can pay Arch Manning 10 of the 20. You know, like
I would not go to Texas. I'll be honest. If I was a wide receiver, I would not go to Texas.
But that's the
somebody's
thing.
Always going to get paid.
Everyone's
going to
pay
you.
The quarterbacks more. So like, this isn't just a Texas problem. Alabama and Texas and USC will all be paying their quarterback $10 million, and the amount of money left for a wide receiver will be the same.
Can you imagine though, if you're the program who doesn't, you attract all the other talent, where Arch Manning's throwing to JUCO wide receiver number 5.
That'll be how it works.
Yeah, like someone from the 913 on the Texans says the roster. This is in NAIA. This is a different level, but still, roster number in NAIA was 24 full rides. They took their cost of a freshman times 24. That gives us a salary cap. They then divided that among their players. That's how they did it. And again, that's NAIA level, but still, it gives you an idea of somebody that's been involved in these type of conversations.
I think you should be forced into a decision just like any other capped league. Like you shouldn't just get like. I think, again, it creates equality, Drew. Like you're saying, I won't go to Texas. Great. I hope you go to Missouri or Kansas or Kansas State, where they'll pay you more to be a wide receiver and the talent is more equally distributed.
Yeah, but the talent wouldn't, because everybody's leaving Texas to go to said school because they're paying the quarterback half the cap.
Why wouldn't that equal it? Because Texas would be worse versus have every talented player.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that Texas wouldn't be as good anymore. We're all of a sudden...
Great.
Cody's saying he thinks it will balance everything out. I want Alabama, Ohio State,
I want them all to be worse.
But Texas would become West Virginia, and West Virginia would become Texas because you're paying all of the money to one individual.
No. Not unless they did a really good job building their roster. They get the same amount of money.
In this hypothetical, you think West Virginia's not paying their quarterback more, too? Of course they are.
I think it's up.
Like every team's going to pay their quarterback more.
I think
they're not going to have like
it's roster construction
for the most part. Right,
the best GMs at roster construction will win.
But if you're a program, why would I pay the number one player in the country half my cap when I could play the 20th best quarterback in the country and pay everybody?
You get to make that choice. That's what I like about it. It's roster construction.
Not every team will do to that exact extent.
Yeah,
but yeah,
not half.
But I think that actually creates more imbalance if you allow people to do it in different ways. Where if everybody is the same way and there's roster limits,
then they'll just choose Texas and the imbalance exists.
No, they won't, for the reason that you just said, because there's roster limits, they'll go somewhere else. And they know that they'll get the same. I know that I can make the same amount of money at Alabama that I do at Texas, but I can make more NIL, you're going to pick your decision based on...
You make more NIL at Texas.
You'd base your decision more off of things than just money. You'd base it on a variety of other different things. If you can get the same set balance of money at where... This is where, again, name, image, and likeness is what your value is, regardless of where you go. It should not matter that you can get more NIL at Texas compared to another school.
But it does matter.
No, it does not.
To the start,
it does. But with this new system, if you're paid the exact same amount of money in one place or another, if I can be a really good player.
You was very utopian in college football.
Yeah, I hear you. And
I'm sorry, but look, Oklahoma City is a small market, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is worth more money than Austin Reeves is, even though they both play on separate teams in vastly different markets.
Because SGA is a better player than Austin Reeves.
I understand that.
That's why SGA is just a flat out better player. I kind of get what you're saying. SGA makes the same amount of money
in LA as he would in Oklahoma City.
It's a professional sports league that doesn't have
college football.
No, but what you're saying, Cody is saying that
you get drafted. You don't choose your team. There's all these other things that change.
You're arguing that, like, let's say Arch Manning went to Kansas instead. You're saying that the exact, like, maybe that's a bad example, but
because
like,
he's Arch Manning, he will make a certain amount of money, and it doesn't matter whether he goes to Texas or whether he goes to Kansas.
But I
name, image, and likeness, because his value
But I disagree. I disagree. Like, maybe if Kansas all of a sudden for many years became a solid program, but in general, if you are in the SEC and you're the starting quarterback at Texas, there will be more NIL opportunity for you. The base salary, quote unquote, in this hypothetical might be the same in this 20, you know, this split. They might give 90% of their 20 million to, 90% is a terrible percentage, but they might give 30% of it to their starting quarterback, and they would do the same 30% at Texas. That might be level. But if you don't think the money from NIL, which remember NIL, technically, if you're a booster
at name image, we need to change it from name image and likeness.
It is still
NIL. It's not NIL because if your value is determined on where you go, then it's not name image and likeness because your name is not being fully represented
it
is.
No. Like if my dollar amount that I'm getting paid from the school is let's claim it's equal, I can still earn NIL. I'm telling you that if I own a business and I'm a University of Texas alum in this hypothetical, and I own a business that's worth billions of dollars, and I'm like, you know what? Because I'm not going to get, if I'm the Texas alum business owner, I'm not giving money to KU for Arch Manning. Does somebody at Texas with a bigger alumni base, do they have more wealthy donors that own a business that through NIL can quote unquote funnel the money to their quarterback than the guy at Kansas that's trying to pay their quarterback? The answer is still yes.
Then we need to change it from name, image, and likeness because
you like a branding reshift?
If you're getting paid more because you're going to Texas than you are somewhere else because of boosters, you're getting paid for your play because you're coming to there. It's not your value. It's because you're coming to Texas.
You can call it whatever you want. It's what's happening, though.
We
can call it whatever. We can change it to handouts. I don't care. It's still the same thing,
but
man.
But in terms of what it's called, it is not name, image, and likeness.
Well, that's... Yeah, we're arguing, the utopian...
I'm telling you that it's not. If your value is your value, regardless of where you go, that's name, image, and likeness. If your value,
I just
changes,
disagree. Like, it's fine. Like
as
we
individual changes based on where you go, then it's not your. Then it's not your value.
Drew, we understand. Like we understand what you're saying about it, but like I just fundamentally disagree. Name, image, and likeness. The first part of what you're talking about. Name. My name has value. My name
Arch
is
Manning's
Arch
name.
Hold on.
Not Arch Manning at Texas.
No, I understand. That's the name part of image and likeness. Image is Arch at Texas. Like, I'm just saying, like, they don't all mean name, and name. You were saying there's three words in it. Name, image, and likeness don't mean Arch Manning, and Arch Manning. They mean my name as it stands, my image as a member of the Texas football program, and my likeness as a result of a football player. Like, they don't all just mean the same thing, I guess is the argument
and
I would make.
And if the money
they
was even for everybody,
things.
Then wouldn't it be better for the sport if you could have Arch Manning at Kansas football than Arch Manning at Texas for the individual?
Yeah, I don't know. I still think it could be good for the sport. I still think it could create some equality. We'll see. Might not. The NCAA doesn't really love that. And the blue, the big boys will still have more advantages for the same reasons. The more NIL money, more everything else in between. To recruit, higher level of play, more chance to get drafted, a million other reasons. Any kind of equality brought to any sport, I'm for. I think that's why everyone loves the NFL. The NFL does get to be king, partially because you technically have an equal shot to all draft Patrick Mahomes. It's not even once the games start, but at least from a starting point, it is.
All right, up next, we'll get to what's trending, and we were joined by the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. We asked him, has he seen any progress from MJ at the plate, and also his thoughts on what they need to see from Jack Caglione in the minors.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's trending?
What's trending presented by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. Obviously, we have a new national champion in men's basketball. The Florida Gators got that done last night, came back from 12 points down against Houston. Todd Golden, the second youngest now, I believe, head coach to win a national championship at the Division I level. Odds are already out for 2026. The Duke Blue Devils somehow are favorites when we don't even know what 90% of these rosters are going to look like across college basketball. But hey, you can lay down some money.
You know their team will probably be pretty good.
Yeah, KU's 16-1, MU's 100-1, K-State's 100-1.
Next up on What's Trending, the Royals continue their series tonight against Minnesota after getting the win last night, getting them back even on the season at 5-5. Cole Reagans will take on Pablo Lopez on the mound tonight as those two continue to do battle. Minnesota right now second to last in the division. They've got one win more than the Chicago White Sox. A bit of a rocky start for them. Royals, all their first three runs last night were all like bloops. Not exactly like murderous offense, but the job still got done one way or the other. Are you guys trying to...
He was telling me about our interview we're about to play.
Oh, sorry. You guys got too busy discussing, continuing to discuss.
No. He was telling me something that is required for our show here after What's Trending, Cody.
Oh, okay.
Actually, very important.
Very important stuff.
Okay.
The Nuggets did fire their head coach, Michael Malone. That was a stunner today.
And their GM.
And their general manager. 5 days before the season ends, three games to go. They're the fourth seed in the West. This is the second head coach in the last 2 weeks to get fired for a team that's currently slated to make the postseason. I think this is just they're not happy with the team's performance, but it just makes no sense. It's unprecedented 5 days before the season ends to fire a head coach that's going to be coaching your team that won a championship for you.
2 years ago.
2 years ago, winningest coach in Denver Nuggets franchise history.
I don't know why you wouldn't just let them play out the rest of the season and then fire them. Doesn't make any sense. Next up on Watch Trending, sad news in the baseball world. MLB pitcher, former Royal of 15 years, Octavio Dotel has passed away after a ceiling collapse at a nightclub in the Dominican Republic. His body was recovered today, confirming the tragic accident. He spent a year in Kansas City, but 15 in baseball altogether. Really tragic way to die,
that's
of course.
Terrible. Yeah, so just awful, was at awful. A nightclub like last night or something?
Yeah, there's obviously clearly a... they said.
Wow. Well, I didn't
have to go recover his body via jet ski, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awful situation there in the Dominican Republic. That is what's trending here on Cody and Gold. Earlier today, we were joined by the general manager and the executive vice president of baseball ops for the Royals, JJ Piccolo. He joins us every couple weeks throughout the baseball season. A lot of things to address with him. We started our conversation talking about Chris Bubich, guy that was in the bullpen. What if anything has changed for Bubich this year, who now looks like a pretty darn good starter for the Royals?
To be honest with you, I don't think anything's really changed. I mean, prior to his injury, he was in our rotation, and those first couple starts before he got hurt, we thought he had really turned the corner. He added the slider, which was a pitch that he always wanted to throw, and he sort of perfected it over the offseason. And just when we thought he was ready to be a regular in our rotation, he gets injured. So last year, I think we were just really fortunate that he was able to get back and not only pitch in the major leagues, but pitching the role that he pitched in, because there's a lot of high leverage innings, some back-to-back outings, which is difficult on a guy coming off of, a Tommy John and a rehab. But very honestly, part of our confidence in being able to acquire Indy and using a starting pitcher was the presence of Chris Bubich. And his first two starts have been outstanding.
How do you handle like the long-term play with it? Let's just say he's going to pitch like this all year, which would make him a Cy Young candidate. But like, if he pitches at the level you guys thought he could do, how do you handle it so you get to let him pitch in September or October? At times you might really also want him, you know?
Yeah, I think that's going to be something we're going to have to play out through the season. It's hard to predict. I mean, there's going to be times during the season where, yeah, he's going to get a little bit fatigued. And if we had the opportunity to skip a start, you know, with an off day in there, the All-Star break will factor in. But, you know, one thing that's really hard to account for is what his workload was really like last year. Because when you count his innings from the time he was in Arizona rehabbing through his rehab in Omaha, he pitched about 80 innings. And how do you account for the short spurts where he throws 3 out of 4 or 3 out of 5, and how do you translate that into actual innings as a starter? That's a really difficult thing to do. So we're just going to play it start to start. There's really not a lot of concern of getting him through the season. It's just a matter of how do we read it and how is he feeling? And if he's feeling good, we don't have any reason to hold him back. We're going to keep, I don't want to say push him, but we're going to keep allowing him to pitch and not think of the glass half empty. You know, the glass is half full for Chris. He's really moving in the right direction, and we're excited for it. How he feels in August will probably determine how we go about getting him some rest along the way.
Chris Bubich, obviously been a huge positive 10 games in. Overall, just to this point, what do you make of what you've seen from your team coming out of spring training and starting the first couple games?
I think, you know, I'm glad we're 5-5, you know, just the way we start out swinging the bats. But, you know, the bats coming to a little bit, but I thought the consistency and the approach that we had over the last 3 or 4 games is what we expect. We had some scoring opportunities. We didn't capitalize, but we still managed to win the game. But when you look at our starting pitching, our bullpen, our defense, and our lineup, you know, it's a pretty good team. You know, not ready to say it's the greatest team baseball's ever seen, but you know, we're in a good spot because the pitching is going to keep us in games. And, you know, if we're ahead after 6 or 7 innings, we got a pretty good chance to win the game with the way the back of our bullpen's set up right now.
I guess, yeah, that's really what it is. You mentioned pitching. I think a lot of times people go to the starting end of it. I think we ran the numbers earlier, including Daniel Lynch. So if we include him in the Harvey, Urseg, Estevez combo, they've gone almost 21 innings and have only allowed a single earned run. I imagine that this is kind of exactly what you were praying for, JJ, when you were building the back end of the bullpen this offseason?
Yeah, no, we want, you know, you want to, if you have a lead, you want to lock down that win. And I think we have the makings, not only, you know, with the three that have been thrown the 7th, 8th, and 9th, but you mentioned Daniel. Let's not forget about Zerpa. You know, those guys can pitch in high leverage situations. So not only is it some power at the end of the pen, but we can match up a little bit too, having two lefties that we're not afraid to use. And Sam Long has been in high leverage. You know, last year, you know, I was reminded the other day, you know, it was in September and October that we were going to Sam Long in the 7th inning, the 8th inning. So, you know, let's not forget him as well. So it, you know, there's balance there. And that's what I think we're most excited about is we have options, you know, like tonight's a night where, you know, those back three have thrown 3 out of 4 days, and that's difficult on guys. So we'll have to see how the game goes. But tonight's a night where somebody else is going to have to step up and maybe finish the game for us, because this is about, you know, the long run, not just the short term. And, you know, these are where guys take advantage of opportunities when we get into situations like tonight, and they solidify themselves as a big part of our pen.
I've seen some like interview quotes, I think with Andy Rogers and a few others, Daniel Lynch talking about high leverage. We're like, I wouldn't call it laissez-faire, but like, seem like he's not pushing you guys into, no, I want more and more and more of that yet. What has kind of his attitude been about, like, earning those opportunities or taking advantage of those? Because last year he wasn't in the highest leverage for you. To begin this year, you guys obviously have those three at least that would seemingly be ahead of him for those spots. How is he handling, like, you know, asking for those opportunities or expecting what to do with them? Is it just about when he gets in that spot, making sure he does it well?
Yeah, I think it's more about just seizing the opportunity. When he gets into those situations, go ahead and perform like he has. I think the mindset's got to be the same. Just because you're throwing maybe the eighth inning, you know, it's different, but it needs to be the same approach as if he's throwing the sixth inning, because the sixth inning often determines what's happening in the eighth inning. So all of those innings are important. So when guys get opportunities like that, we don't want them to change anything they're doing. You know, it's really the same three outs you got to get. And if a guy can keep a clear mind and approach the eighth like he approaches the sixth, he's probably going to have success. Now, that's easier said than done, because we all know the game gets heightened as you get deeper in the game. But the reality is, you don't even know where you might be in the lineup. You know, you might be towards the bottom third of the lineup when you get that opportunity in the eighth. So that may be easier in the eighth than the sixth if you're facing 3, 4, 5. So every situation's a little bit different, but we don't want Daniel or anybody to change your mindset. Compete for those three outs like it's the ninth inning, because every inning can determine the outcome of the game.
We're talking to Royals General Manager and Executive Vice President J.J. Piccolo here on 96.5 The Fan. Obviously, MJ Melendez at the plate hasn't gotten off to the start that he would have liked, that you guys would have liked necessarily, but are you seeing over the last game or two anything different from him, at least when he steps into the batter's box? Is he getting closer?
Yeah, I think he is. And even though, you know, regardless of what the batting average is, I think over the last four games, he's got on base 6-7 times in that area. But I think he's made a little bit, you know, of a change. I can't really, you know, say I'm 100% sure, but it looks like his bat angle is a little bit different, where he's starting. And he's on time a little bit more. The ball he hit last night was as good of a swing as anyone can take. I mean, a little more elevation, that ball's out. So that was a good at bat. The walk was a good at bat. You know, one at bats he struck out, you know, I probably shouldn't say it, but I don't know where that pitch was.
And, it was definitely, you know, a ball.
Yeah, he's competing well in that at bat. So that's why we try not to get too result oriented. That at bat was pretty good. It didn't end the way we wanted it to end, but it was still pretty good at bat. So really, three out of his four at bats last night were good. And guys need to gain confidence, and last night should be a big confidence booster for MJ. And even, you know, the prior 2 days, I thought he did some good things in the batter's box.
What about Mikel Garcia? We, you know, going into the season, we were trying to figure out, like, is he not, like, positionless, but with India and Massey and some of these guys playing outfield and infield, weren't really sure it fits. I guess first, how do you view him in center, and is moving around taking the pressure off the plate? Did he change things in his approach? And we didn't talk about it as much, because obviously he's off to a good start offensively.
Yeah, well, when Mikel's swinging the bat the best, it's when he's using the whole field, and even more so to the right center field gap. That way, when his bat and his swing is geared to go in that direction, he usually stays over the ball longer. His bat stays in the zone, and he hits line drives. I mean, he hit three balls on the nose last night. I mean, the first one was really good because there was a man on second, and he had fouled a ball off before that, and he's trying to shoot that ball to right field. Then he gets a pitch that's up a little bit, and he hits a line drive to right field for a single. That's when you know he's going good. He did that in the playoffs last year in Baltimore, New York. He did it early in the year last year. So I think for us, the challenge with Mikel is just trying to continually remind him that you need to use the whole field. He hit the homer early at home that was pull, and I was really anxious to see what he would do the next games, and he hit the home run to dead center. That's a great sign. But you know what he's doing? We love this. We want this from every player. You know, the positionality is a little bit questionable. Like, where is he going to play every night? But right now, he's forcing us to put him in the lineup every night, and that's what we want. So, luckily, he can play positions. And to answer your other question, there is already improvement in center field. That ball he ran down in right center the other day, I'm not so sure he makes that play, you know, 2-3 weeks ago while we were still in spring training, but he had a beat on that ball. He was calling Renfro off the whole way. He knew he was on it. He makes a nice running catch. And I think as time goes on, those catches will look even easier because he's going to get better jumps, better reads. He's going to accelerate. And when he gets to the point where he's catching the ball, he's not still going to be moving. He's going to be there and, you know, catching the ball more to his side than on the run. So he's athletic. He's going to be able to do a lot of things for us defensively. And we all believe he's going to excel at whatever position he plays.
10 games in, I don't know how many of these pregame ceremonies you've had for different awards. I'm sure it doesn't get old doing that. Are you guys done yet? I feel like there's been 7 of them for some of your guys.
Well, the first day we did it, we won the game. So the next day I was down there, the guys started asking if I was superstitious. I said, no, it's just another pregame. And then we lost that game. So when I showed up the third day, they're like, beat it, get out of here. So, but no, it's nice. You know, a lot of that stuff is happening early in the season. And, you know, it's, you know, Bobby had asked him on the field at one point, are you tired of getting these awards? He said, no, keep them coming. So it's a good thing. I think it's great for our fans. I mean, Salvi got that Roberto Clemente Award at the World Series last year, but he got a nice standing ovation. I mean, of all the awards in baseball, you know, that is arguably the best award because it speaks about who the person is. And then obviously Salvi's really talented as well, but it was nice to see our fans recognize him and give him a standing ovation for all the great things he does off the field. And it's what we want our players to be.
JJ, I want to ask you about just one minor league player because our listeners ask us about him. I know, you know, I'm going to ask about Jack Caglione. It's only 3 games in, so I don't want to ask about performance in general. Just what organizationally for a player like him, do you guys want to see a Double-A to know that he's ready to progress at Triple-A? So like, what are the things specifically the organization is looking for him to do?
I probably thought you were going to ask him about somebody else. So,
Carter Jensen. Hey, he's had a good start too,
Jack,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely he has. He's been great. I think with Jack, I mean, it's really hard to, I guess, explain and understand. It's the quality of the bats guys are taking and who is he facing? You know, is he facing a quality, you know, pitcher that can make pitches similar to the pitches that he's going to be facing in the major leagues? You know, what's he doing against left-handed pitchers and what type of a bat is he taking there? We know he's got power. I mean, like for him to hit a ball the way he did in Tulsa, that's not surprising to us. But the very next day with 2 strikes, he hits a line drive to left center field. Another bat, he was down 0-2 and he walks. That's more important to us in trying to determine how ready he is for the major leagues than seeing him hit a hanging breaking ball 460 feet. You know, that he's going to do that, but it's how he handles his at-bats, what he does with 2 strikes. Does he recognize situations to get the run in because he's going to be in that category of run producer. But it's not going to be a small sample that we're going to make that determination. It's going to be a large sample. And, you know, we haven't determined, you know, is it 100 at-bats, 500 at-bats? We just have to have an instinct. We have people watching him every night. You know, we have reports from the coaches every night. You know, there is another step for him to take, and that's called AAA before he even gets to the major league. So, you know, that's what we're looking for. We want to see the quality of the bat, the consistency, because we know one thing, it's a lot harder here in the major leagues because the pitchers are the elite of the elite, and we got to put him in the best position to handle that. So when he comes up, he never goes back, and that's the best way to handle players.
Well, I can tell you he hasn't done anything to this point that hasn't calmed the fan base's excitement, which is that's something we get texts every single day about, which is fun, right? I mean, that's people should be excited.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, shoot, he's got one of the best prospects in the game. I mean, and that is exciting. So, you know, I'm glad. I mean, I'm being very candid. I love when our fans are talking about the Royals, whether it's good, bad, one player, the whole team. That's what we do this for. We want our fans talking about what we have going on. And I think it's great that they're talking about Cags, and we are too, you know, but they're, you know, we're also watching everybody else. You know, you mentioned Carter Jensen. I mean, he's off to a great start as well. And Gavin Cross and, you know, that team has got something. You know, they got a lot of offensive ability on that team. They're scoring a ton of runs, and that's fun to watch. But again, with every one of those guys, it's all about the process of how their bats and how they are going and how they mature as a player, you know, to determine if they're ready in the major leagues. All of these guys in the major leagues did great things in Double A. If you go back and look at every one of our players, they've all done great things in Double A, and that's the perspective that we've got to keep.
JJ Piccolo, Royal General Manager, always appreciate it. We'll check in here in a couple weeks.
All right, guys. Thank you.
There you go. So that was JJ Piccolo earlier today. We went over a couple things with him. How about what he said in regards to Chris Bubich, though? Like that was also what made it a little bit easier to pull off a tough trade, moving on from a guy that's been very successful in Kansas City and Brady Singer.
Like, well, starter in your rotation that was working last year.
Chris Bubich. We need to get better in the lineup. India's going to do that for us. Yeah, we think Chris Bubich can fill that vacancy. And it's two outings, but so far they look great.
The last 180 seconds of the show brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss, online at awaken180weightloss.com. No, I totally agree. And honestly, you have to kind of borderline not like or be hopeful of Chris Bubich. You got to be convinced that man is working if you're going to give up a guy who for a majority of the season was your number three or four starter. I'd say for half the season, he was pretty much your number three starter. For the other half, he was pretty much your number four starter. And he's off to a good start, obviously, for Cincinnati. This feels like one of those mutually beneficial, ideally, kind of trades is kind of the hope. Right now, Indy is working out great. He's one of the few guys on offense you can count on night in and night out. Gets on base, gets hits, moves runners. He's just like a classic ball player, which you desperately needed in this order. Then you can just hope the guys like, if you get anything out of Mikel, Renfro, MJ. And I know they got nothing out of Renfro so far. They're getting more out of MJ lately, as he previously mentioned. We brought that up because I don't think it's unfair to talk about a player when they're struggling and to be like, they're struggling. They don't look good. In the first five games of the season, MJ Melendez looked lost at the plate. I'm not saying he's turned a corner yet. I think it's way, way, way too early to say that. Over the last three games, MJ looks comfortable.
Some better at bats.
He's driving the ball. Yeah. He's walking more. And JJ's not wrong. That was not kind of, that was absolutely a ball on strike three late in that game yesterday. And it didn't matter, so I don't care. But when you look at it, yeah, I mean, he's putting in some quality at-bats. And if he's going to hit seventh gold, okay, quality at-bats is all I care about. Driving the ball every once in a while is all I care about. He's not hitting fifth anymore for this team. I don't require him to be a big-time bat in the order. I need him to be capable.
Yeah, we also asked about Jack Caglione. And a few people were texting in saying 100 at-bats. No, if you go back and listen to the answer, we were asking about Cags, and he said, we don't know if it's 100 at-bats, 500 at-bats. A few people on the text line took that as JJ said, 100 at-bats is what they're looking for. No, he said, could be 100 at-bats, could be 500 at-bats. We don't know. So I just want to clarify that.
It kind of depends on how he plays. Yeah. To be clear, so he said at-bats, not plate appearances. Let's just assume it's plate appearances. Mm-hmm. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and go with it. That's at minimum 25 games before they would send him to AAA. Like, that's the minimum at four at-bats.
I'm just saying I don't want people to think. All we need is 100 at-bats and we'll have an idea.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It could be more than that.
A minimum of 100 at-bats would be a minimum 25 games. And Minder, I just want to point out the other thing he said in there, which is there's another thing he does before the big leagues. It's called AAA. It's in Omaha.
He didn't act like he's skipping the levels.
No. He made it very clear he's not skipping. He's going through the normal progression that a player goes through. Unless he hits 500 in AAA this entire time, then obviously things could change. But if he's saying doesn't know if it's between 100, 25 or 100 or 100 and 500, that's between 25 and 100 games. That's in the entire minor league season. So we'll see.
JJ joins us every other week here on the show. Tomorrow we're back at it on a Wednesday. Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, is going to join us. Don't forget to head out to Kauffman Stadium. Maybe check out his new broadcast booth. How cool is that? If you're out at the K, stop by, say hello to Vern tonight, 5:30 on Deck Show, right here on 96.5 The Fan. Up next, though, CDOT and Rob. I believe Bink is in for CDOT today. So, Bink, I'm sure we'll have maybe some news on the new mock draft and everything coming your way next.